All right, good afternoon. It is Monday, March 30th. No, Tuesday, March 30th. I'm off by a day, 1240, and we're doing Chem 12B. So a couple of things. I got a quiz input yesterday, but I'm still working on the exams. And I did not work a whole lot over spring break, much like you guys probably didn't work a whole lot over spring break. I spent most of my time trying to recuperate on my back, which is getting better, but very slowly. So I'm just limited amounts of time standing and zero time sitting. In other news, I get the second dose of the vaccine tomorrow. And it's the Moderna vaccine, which is, yeah, kind of exciting. And also, I don't know what's going to happen on Thursday, because everybody that I know who has gotten the Moderna vaccine has gotten pretty sick for like 24 to 48 hours after getting that second dose. So we'll just see. I'll see, and I'll email everybody out Wednesday night, Thursday morning, and see how I'm doing, and take Advil before I go. Yeah. I think you can take Tylenol and Advil are okay. They don't want you to take Motrin, but Tylenol and Advil are okay. And I've heard it's kind of gnarly. The first one I did fine with. My arm is sore, but a lot like a tennis shot, but we'll see how the next one goes. Okay. We've been doing NMR. Let's keep doing that. I'll kind of pick up where we left off, and I want to do some problems that are a little bit better spectra than the other spectra that we've been trying. And so these are some problems that I typically do at this time of the year. And it's an entire walkthrough, both looking at the carbon and the proton. And in order to start that, let me send you two links through the chat really quickly, if I can. So the first one is a carbon NMR. So there's the CNMR table. And the second one is the HNMR table. So those are two good tables to have on hand. These guys are out of Carrie's book. Carrie is a book that I used prior to switching over to the new book that we're using that I like, which for some reason cannot find in front of me. Klein. I can never remember Klein's name, unfortunately. Klein has some good tables too, but these are just clean, easy to use tables, and I like them a lot. So I'm going to bring these tables in as we're working as well and show you guys those as we're going through and doing it. And the problems that I'm going to work off of today, let me go ahead and start a screen share. I'll go to the iPad. Okay, so here's the new note. And now I can see all of you and I can see the chat. And so what I want to work on today is off of this website. Come on, back. How much did I do this morning? There we go. Organic structure elucidation. This website doesn't have answers on the website, but it has the best spectrum. And so I want to work from good spectrum right now for a little bit and show you what the spectrum can look like. And the first problem that I want to try, they haven't broken out into easy, moderate, and difficult, is I want to work on 64, the last one. This is C10H12O. And so the first thing that we're going to do number 64 on structure elucidation website. And we said that it was C10H12O. Okay, so the first thing that we do is, even before looking at the spectra, is I like to just get my units of unsaturation really quickly. So just to remind you guys, Cn H2n plus 2 plus 1 for every nitrogen minus 1 for every halogen. That's the number for saturated. And so with 10 carbons, it's going to be H2 times 10 plus 2. We have no nitrogens. We have no halogens. And so that's going to give us, for saturated, 22. And we've got H12. So you subtract the 12 from the 22. And then you go ahead and divide that by 2. Because this is telling you how many missing hydrogens you have. Every 2 hydrogens that are missing is a unit of unsaturation. So we've got 5 units of unsaturation. That number is really critical for moving forward and figuring out what to do next. It sets up all of your parameters and things that you're going to look for. It sets up a lot of expectations, because when you have a high number, and I consider 4 and greater to be a high number, and you have a low number of carbons, so high number of units, and low number of carbons. So high number I consider to be greater than 4, or greater than or equal to 4. And low number of carbons would be something like less than or equal to maybe 12. Usually this implies an aromatic ring. Not always, but oftentimes. How do I know that? Why is that true? Because it's the only way to be able to get that many units of unsaturation with a small number of carbons. So when we look at an aromatic ring, this equals 4 units all on its own. And you've got the ring plus 3 double bonds, and that's 4 units of unsaturation. So at 5 units of unsaturation and 10 carbons, and it's looking like, at C10, H12O, if this is probably something that is aromatic, that's 4 units. And I have 1 more unit. So I have plus 1 ring, plus 1 double bond, and these should be ors. 1 ring or an alkene. Or carbonyl, something like that. And so we're going to be looking for those additional factors to see what could be happening in this molecule. That's kind of what I bring into it. Okay, let's go get the spectra. And then from the spectra, we'll take some screenshots. We'll bring in those screenshots. And I always like to start with the proton NMR. In this website, what they do that is nice is they have the zones already blocked out. And the way it works is you just click on a zone, it zooms in, click back on the screen, it zooms back out. And so it's very easy to go back and forth. There's no having to zoom in or pick a range. Everything is very well defined for you. And they give you the integration values as absolute integration values rather than giving you the error bars. So they don't, or not error bars, but the integration bars. So you don't have to guess at what the integrations are on this website. This is more akin to what I'm going to do in an exam situation or quiz situation. I will give you definite integration values, and I will give you nice, clear zoom-ins so that you can see what the splitting patterns are that are taking place within the molecule. All right, so first off, let's bring this in, because this is the whole spectrum. And it's nice to see. And then also, I think, let's take each one of these patterns and bring them in as well so that we could see the whole thing. Like, is it triplet? Maybe I don't need that last triplet, but I definitely want these guys. Okay, that should be everything I need for now. And we can always come back to the spectrum if we need more. All right, so that should throw it into a bunch of different windows. And it lists out, I was going to title it, but I don't need to because it's already titled it for me. What I might do here, though, is go grab that table. And I used it in the lab notes this morning, so it'll be easier to find this way. Come on. Why doesn't it want to copy? Trying to think of the best way to get it back in here. I think I'll just drop it in from where I was on the website. Okay, so that should have come in all the way down here. When it brings it in as a PDF, which is why I'm having trouble. All right, now we should be able to see everything at once. That's why I was having trouble. Okay. So the first things, looking at these different peaks that are in this proton spectrum. The first thing to note is that there is a peak that is right here that has no mark on it. Any idea what that is that has no mark on it? Solvent. Yes, BB, correct. That's the NMR solvent. And so it's telling me that that's CdCl3, and that's where CdCl3 shows up in the proton NMR. And so that's the solvent that's there. Everything else is a signal that I've got to worry about. And as I'm looking at these, and we're looking at the 1 to 2 parts per million, and I come down here and I look in the 1 to 2 parts per million, that the things that show up in there, these are CH3 and CH2 groups. And so these range here, these guys, I would say, are just alkyl. We'll put more information on them in a minute. At 3, whatever that is at 3 parts per million, 3 is right in here. That's the peak that I'm looking at. These guys are all kinds of things. They can be hydroxyl groups. They can be protons that are a step away from a carbonyl, as I see these here, or a step away from a double bond, or halogens, or hydrogens that are connected on the same carbon as oxygens. There's a whole lot of things that they can be. We're not exactly sure what they are, but this is probably something that is got an electron withdrawing group on it. And then 2 hydrogens, but we'll check back and we'll look at what that might be. And then these guys between 7 and 8 that are out here, between 7 and 8, this is where aromatic groups show up. And so these are our aromatic hydrogens. And there are 2, 4, 5 aromatic hydrogens. So what I've done is just sort of informally, I wanted to lay things out and show you where things are. And now what we'll do, now that we sort of have that list of where things are, we'll go down and we'll break it down step by step using the table and using a tabular method of data analysis to figure out what each of these things are. All right, so what I'm gonna do here is I'm gonna take these details. And line these details up over here. And I don't have the one other, and now I'm regretting that I didn't get it because I want to put them sort of all on the same page so that we can see them all at the same time. So I'm going to go get that other detail real quick. And it's this one. All right, so this will give us all the peaks. We'll get it up here on the same page. And we'll reduce it in size so that it sneaks right in here. Okay, so those are all three of our protons that we need to worry about. And we can now see what the splittings are. So we're going to start our table. And in this table, what I want to do is I want to track parts per million. I want to track integration, multiplicity, number of neighbors, and then an assignment. And what we're reading is we're reading from right to left. And I've got these set up so that they go in increasing order. So we're going to start here. This one is going to be A, B, C, D, E, and F. So A that I'm looking at is at 1 parts per million. It has an integration that if I zoom in on that integration, it's showing me an integration value of 3. What's the multiplicity? Is it a doublet, singlet, triplet, quartet? Triplet, JC, good. So this first one is a triplet. And how many neighbors does a triplet have? 2. Okay, and an assignment. So this is something I did in lab this morning. I'm going to go through the same exercise in the afternoon, which shows a reverse sort of NMR. But one of the things that we talked about a lot is that when you have an integration that is 3 hydrogens, that 3 hydrogens generally equals a CH3 group. When you have an integration that is 2 hydrogens, it generally equals a CH2 group. Not all the time, but these multiples, if you think multiples of 3, 3, 6, 9, when you see odd multiples of 3, 6, 9, all in the same chemical environment, the only way to get those groups in the same chemical environment, or one of the easiest ways, is if they're all on the same carbon, which makes a methyl. And so this is looking like it's a methyl. And so I would say that this is just simply a CH3 group. And it's very far upfield. Where I would expect to see a methyl that doesn't have any sort of electron withdrawing groups on it. There is one thing to note here, and we haven't talked about this aspect yet, but if you look at this triplet is kind of interesting in that it's not perfectly symmetrical. This line and this line do not reach the exact same height. In fact, what it's doing is something called roofing. Roofing is where a multiplet, a triplet, doublet, quartet, whatever it be, roofs in a particular direction, meaning that if I connect the lines that are unequal and put a line over the top of it, it leans in a perfect or in a particular direction that that is going to tell me something about the molecule. For instance, this one can be seen to be roofing this way. And this one is roofing that way. And the other one is pretty flat. Let's see what these guys are doing. Oh, there's a very strong roofing. And this is maybe one of the best examples here in this molecule of what roofing is. So why is roofing important? Why am I looking at all of these? Let me stop for an aside real quick and show you. When you have splittings, that are roofing, protons that split each other tend to roof towards each other. So if we have a triplet and maybe a doublet, when they roof towards each other, and we think about the roof of a house, these guys are sort of forming that roof of a house in that they are roofing towards each other. When they roof towards each other, there's a good possibility that they are splitting each other, that they are near neighbors. We also want the J value to be the same, but if they're roofing towards each other, they may be neighbors. If they roof away from each other, in other words, if they're roofing in opposite directions, or I should say roofing in the same direction, so here, these are roofing same direction. These guys are not neighbors. They're not splitting each other. So we call it roofing because of the roof of a house and the way that a house builds a roof. When two are roofing towards each other, in other words, the underside is pointed this way, the underside is pointed this way, they're roofing towards each other, they may be neighbors. We need to check the J values to see if they actually are neighbors. But if they are roofing in the same direction like this, then they are definitely not neighbors. And we can discount them as being possible neighbors. So that's a little thing about roofing. And so paying attention to those inequalities in the peaks, the roofing of the peaks, can be a very helpful technique for deciding what types of protons we have. Okay. So roofing, I don't keep track of in my table. It's something that I just look at on the spectrum and I mark out on the spectrum to think about in the spectrum. And one of those things that the roofing is showing me is that this guy, the way it's roofing and the way that this one is roofing, is that these might be, there's a possibility they could still be splitting each other, but likely not because of the direction that they're roofing, that they're both roofing the same direction. I'll give you a little bit more on that a bit later. Okay. The second peak is at 1.75. Well, let's just call it 1.8. It makes it easier. This is peak B. 1.8. Integration 2. Multiplicity. What is that multiplicity? Triplet, quartet, pentet, sextet. Sextet. And how do we know for sure? So one of the things to know for sure to note is that when we look at multiplicities is to go back to that come back to me in a second. The triangle, Pascal's triangle, which tells me the intensities that I expect to see. So I'm seeing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm seeing 6 peaks. At 6 peaks, it should be 1 to 5 to 10 to 10 to 5 to 1. And indeed, this does look like 1 to 10, and that's about half of the other one. So it does look like that's the intensities, 1 to 5. I'm not going to be able to fit that in there with that big a pen. One to five to 10 to 10 to 5 to 1. And so this does look like a sextet. And with a sextet like that, how many neighbors does it have? N plus one rule. So 5. Good, JC. So we'll have to work that out. The assignment, this thing is a CH2, but it's got some electron withdrawing group on it, on the CH2. And so we'll have to figure out what that electron withdrawing group is. Okay. Then we go to this next peak, C. C is sitting at, let's call it 3.0. I know it's 2.96, but just for two sig figs, we'll round it out. ABC. Is sitting at 3.0. And it is integrated for 2 hydrogens. So I'm seeing that 2 hydrogen integration. This one is clearly a triplet. Triplet has 2 neighbors. And this one has a strong electron withdrawing group on a CH2. So we'll list that out as being a strong electron withdrawing group. And then we'll have to figure out what else is connected to that. And then these guys, D, E, and F, these are all aromatic. But in being all aromatic, what's nice is that I see 2, 3, 4, 5. I've got 5 aromatic protons. With 5 aromatic protons, this makes it a lot easier. D, E, F. D is sitting at 7.5. It's 2. It's a triplet. Strong roofing. It's got 2 neighbors. And it's aromatic. E is at 7.55. I have to distinguish it from the other one. There's only one of those. It's a triplet. It's got 2 neighbors. It's aromatic. And I'm not filling out what type of aromatic because I'm going to take all of these, F, which is sitting at 8. It's 2. It's a doublet. Only has 1 neighbor. And it's aromatic. And what I want to show you is with an aromatic ring system, The only way to get 5 protons on an aromatic ring system. There's all 5. This is monosubstituted. It can't be anything else because you need 5 protons. And so with 5 protons, it has to be a monosubstituted aromatic ring system. So when we look at what we've gotten out of this analysis here, we have 3, 2, 2, 2, 1, and 2. So that's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's all 12 protons. So out of these protons, what we have arrived at is we have a monosubstituted aromatic ring system. We have a CH2 group, which is connected to some strong electron withdrawing group. We have a CH2 group, which has an electron withdrawing group on it, and we have a CH3 group. And so what we have accounted for is we've accounted for 6, 7, 8, 9, C9, H12. And our formula was C10H12O. And so we're missing C and an O in terms of everything that we've identified. We've identified parts, but we're missing a C and we're missing an O. So what we need to do is we need to also consider the carbon NMR and go take a look at the carbon NMR and see what that's showing us. So let's go take a look at that. Okay, here's the carbon NMR. Let's screenshot the whole thing. They have some ability for us to be able to zoom in, but zooming in on the carbon NMR doesn't particularly help you. I'll show you why. Let's zoom in on this section here. There's no information here other than the single lines. And so zooming in doesn't really give me a whole lot more information. Although there is some information here that they are giving me when I zoom in that's different than being zoomed out. Take a look at what I'm seeing zoomed out. I've got 13, 17.7, 40.4. And then when I zoom in, I get 13.8Q. 17.7T, 40.4T. Any idea what the Q, T, and T stand for? Also on these guys out here, D, 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 S. Interesting.
Whether they're singlet, doublet, triplet, or...
They are. Okay, so to explain this, let's talk about an NMR experiment. We'll move this guy up here, set him up there for a minute. We'll come back to that. Carbon NMR. We haven't spent much time talking about carbon NMR. In carbon NMR, the C and the proton do cause splitting. The hydrogen splits the carbon. And so if I have a CH3, then I would expect that that carbon signal should be a quartet. And this is in the CNMR. If I have a carbon that has two hydrogens on it, then I expect to see a triplet. And a carbon that just has one proton on it, I would expect to see a doublet. Now, what they do here, and remember where this comes from. This comes from the fact that when I look at the spin states of the carbon, and I take and analyze the spin states of the carbon, the possible spin states that can arise are that I get the carbon next to the hydrogen, where the hydrogen is opposite the magnetic field. So it's in its excited spin state. And this guy is in its ground spin state. And so that gives me the small energy gap. Or I could have the carbon, which is in its ground state, and the proton, which is in its ground state. And because of that, I get a larger energy gap. And so this is what gives rise to having the two different signals. This would be the original signal. And I get the small parts per million. And I get the increase or large parts per million. Now, what happens if I take and make all of the hydrogens in the low ground state? Or I take and I put all of the hydrogens in the excited ground state? What it does is it removes the two possibilities and it sinks it down to a single possibility. And so here's what they do. Because they're at two different frequencies, this is what's called a decoupling experiment. It's sort of a 2D technique. With the HNMR, they pulse the HNMR very quickly. And so they do these really quick, short pulses. And they just keep pulsing it fast. And what that takes is where the protons were in their excited state and their ground state, and it was approximately 50-50 at room temp. By doing this fast pulse, what winds up happening is they excite all of them and they kick the hydrogens into their excited states. That kicking that into 100% excited state relieves the possibility of having a proton in the ground state and gets rid of this line here so that this line now goes away and it resolves it down to a single line. Almost all carbon NMR, is done decoupled. Special experiments are done to get the coupling data. So when you see a spectrum and they have line spectrums here for the carbon NMR. And they're telling you that this is 3T2 doublet. This may be one that's a singlet. These guys are telling me about coupling data. With the proton. It's telling me the number of protons that are on the carbons, essentially, by using the N plus one rule. So by looking at those little T's, Q's, doublets, singlets, I can tell how many protons are actually on those carbons. And that's the coupling data that they're giving me. So coupling data is within this. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take this guy and we're going to go get that coupling data. And we're going to write down that coupling data and use it as well. I got to get it down in the right spot. Come on. So hard to move things around. So let's go back and get that data, and then we'll write it on top of this. Quartet, triplet, triplet. Quartet, triplet, triplet. And then out here, doublet, 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 singlet. Doublet, 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 singlet. And then the 2000, or excuse me, the 200, I don't think it gives me. It doesn't tell me out of the 200, but I'm going to assume that that's a singlet. And I'll show you why. So I'm going to say this guy is a singlet. And this guy that's unmarked is solvent. Okay, so now I have all my data that I need to be able to work this guy up. And I think that the other thing that would be nice is to have that have the carbon NMR table. That's not very helpful. Right, just bring it in from the other spot. Okay, that's better. So what we're doing is we're lining up the same thing and we're looking to see what types of protons these are. These guys here, 13, 17, 40, they're all standard sort of carbon-carbon bonds. What we would say are sort of alkyl groups. Then we get into things that are attached to halogens or triple bonds. We don't have any of that. Solvent sits in here in an area where nothing else shows up. And then these guys, 120 to 140, 120 to 140 tends to be carbon-carbon double bond or aromatic. And we know that we have aromatic in this molecule. So that's our aromatic components that are there. And there are one, two, three, four different types of aromatics that are showing up. So we'll talk about those in a minute. And then this guy out of 200. The only thing that shows out at 200 are different types of carbonyls. And so that guy right there is a carbonyl. So we're going to use both the multiplicities that we see here and the scale to decide what these are. And we're going to make a carbon NMR table, just like we did for proton. And we will have the parts per million. The integrations are not given. We don't get integrations, so we won't do integrations here. But we will, because they did give us multiplicities, we'll do number of neighbors. Except instead of neighbors, we'll call it number of hydrogens. And then we'll have an assignment. And that's the best sort of data that we're going to get out of this. So we've got a 13.8. It has a multiplicity of a quartet. And how many protons are there going to be on a quartet or giving rise to a quartet? So it's the n plus one rule in reverse. If we have a quartet, how many neighbors? Three, BB is correct. So three hydrogens give rise to the quartet. This is the CH3 group. And then we've got 17.7. This is a triplet. The triplet has how many protons on it? Two, JC, thank you. This is a CH2 group. And given that it's downfield a little bit, this has the electron withdrawing group on it. Then I've got 40.4. This is also a triplet. Same thing, two. This is the one with the strong electron withdrawing group. And it is also a CH2. What we're correlating is we're correlating these numbers here. It's telling me how many protons are on each of the different types of carbon. Then we go over the solvent, and then we go to the 128. The 128.5. 132.8. And finally, 137. All of these, oh, not all of them. One of them is a singlet. The rest, the other three are doublets. So these that are doublet, these all have one hydrogen on them. And these guys here are all aromatic with a single proton on them. And so we're looking at an aromatic ring that has a hydrogen on it, and we're correlating that one with a single hydrogen, but the carbon that we're looking at, since we're looking at carbon NMR, these are the types of carbon that we're focusing on here. The 137 is a singlet. That means it doesn't have anything on it. It's an aromatic carbon, but that aromatic type of carbon must have something else connected to it. It must have an R group that's connected to it rather than a hydrogen, because it has no hydrogens connected. So this carbon is the one that we're dealing with. And the fact that it has zero is referring to the fact that it has an R group on it as opposed to a hydrogen. And then our last peak is at 200.4, and it is also a singlet. That means it's got zero. This is a carbonyl. And given everything else that's in this molecule, we needed some strong electron withdrawing groups. This turns out to be the electron withdrawing group. And it gives me both the additional carbon that I was looking for and the oxygen that I was looking for. And so now I have all the parts, And I can start to assemble all of those different parts. So from the HNMR, what I've got is I've got an aromatic ring system, which is monosubstituted. I have a CH3, a CH2, and a CH2 with a strong electron withdrawing group. And then from the carbon, the carbon NMR is giving me this monosubstituted aromatic ring. I'm getting the CH3, the two CH2s, one with an electron withdrawing group and one with a strong electron withdrawing group, but I'm also getting the carbonyl. Okay, and so all of that together is giving me a formula, which is C10H12O, and that's checking with the formula that they gave me. All right, so the last part that I haven't put together yet is using those numbers of neighbors. So if we go back to the proton NMR for a minute, and we look at the proton NMR, and we think about these number of neighbors, the CH3 group has two neighbors. It must be connected to a CH2. And then one of these CH2 has five neighbors, and the other CH2 has two neighbors. How can we correlate that or put that all together? The CH3 has two neighbors. One of the CH2s has five. And one of the CH2s with a strong electron withdrawing group has two neighbors. It looks to me almost as if I take all of this and combine it together and say, I have an electron withdrawing group connected to a CH2, connected to a CH2, connected to a CH3. And that strong electron withdrawing group, this one is the strong one. This one is getting some effect and this one is getting almost no effect. And so if I color code these and think about what's going on here, here's my CH3 group. Here is my CH2 that has the, let's call it the electron withdrawing group. And this one will keep saying strong because that was consistent with what we were doing. And then that one that's got the strong electron withdrawing group on it is this one here. And so what we would see is that the green one would be split into a triplet from this one, would split that guy into a triplet. This CH2 would split the first CH2 likewise into a triplet. So there's my two triplets. And then the number of neighbors that this guy has is 3 plus 2, 5. Five neighbors would split this into a sextet. And then the question is, well, what is the electron withdrawing group that we're dealing with? And that electron withdrawing group is this guy. It's the carbonyl. So if we take all of that and put all that together, what it's looking like because it's looking like this molecule, which I'm going to redraw just really quickly. I find it harder to draw when standing as opposed to sitting, but I think it's just practice. Okay. So this is looking like the correct molecule. However, what I want to advocate is that you should never stop at one example. We have all these different parts. Let's try and take the parts and recombine the parts in multiple ways. We know we have a monosubstituted aromatic ring system, so don't mess with the ring system. But it could be that that carbonyl could be in different positions. And it is worth considering, given that the carbonyl could be in different positions, it's worth considering what the structure would look like, or the spectrum would look like, if that carbonyl were in different locations. How would the spectrum be different? And maybe even one more. If we just think about these different molecules and what these different molecules would look like, what is it that would distinguish these? And does the data support one of these more than the others? So these are, we'll say, our options. And we think that the first one here, A, is probably the best option. But I want to rule out some of the others. Okay, so what do I expect to find here? The methyl group out here has two neighbors. This methyl should be, give me a splitting pattern that I expect to see for that methyl on the terminal end there. Do I expect to see singlet, doublet, triplet, quartet? Triplet, good. Okay, so I'm going to go through in red, and I'm just going to list a triplet. And this is three hydrogens for a triplet. What about the next guy over? This one is two hydrogens in a unique environment, and it has five neighbors. So this guy here is going to integrate for two. And this is what we're saying is the sextet. But that sextet could also show up if the J values were different, and I had a 3+2. I could show up as a triple quartet, is a possibility for what that could show up as. The proton that is here, these guys have two neighbors. This is two protons showing up as a triplet. Now, these guys out here are in the same chemical environment as are these and that one. So I get three more signals. This is going to integrate for two and would be a doublet. This one is going to integrate for one and would be a triplet because it has two neighbors. This guy here is going to be between these two guys here. It's going to integrate for two and it's going to be a triplet or a double doublet. That's basically what I would expect to see out of the aromatic range. The aromatics are all going to be the same, two for doublet, two for triplet, one for triplet. So all the aromatics are going to be the same, and we're not going to be able to distinguish based on the aromatics. But what goes on in the rest of the molecule, that's where things get interesting. Okay, so out here, this triplet, or excuse me, this methyl. This methyl here has two neighbors. It's going to integrate for three, and it'll be a triplet. What about this guy, though? What is that guy going to look like? It's going to integrate for two. There's two protons there. How many neighbors does it have? Yeah, it's got the three neighbors. Thank you, Jakob. So if it's got three neighbors, n plus one rule says that the pattern should be 3 plus 1 is 4. 4 is a quartet, JC. Thank you. So we get a quartet. Now this guy in here, this guy has no neighbors, none that are a J3. So with zero neighbors, what do I expect this one to be at? Should be 2 for a singlet. Yes. That 2 for a singlet would be defining. If I had a singlet that integrated for 2, which I don't, that singlet helps me to rule this one out, that I don't see that in the spectrum. There's also chemical shift in where it's coming at, and we can draw those where they're expected to show up at. Maybe I'll do that in a minute, but let's continue our analysis. How many neighbors for this methyl group out here? Zero. So that's going to be a singlet, right? That would be a defining thing, which I don't have. And then we could look at these guys here. This is going to be 2 for a triplet and 2 for a triplet. And then this gets even more interesting in here. Okay, how many neighbors does this proton have that are a J3? 1, 2, 3. These two protons out here are J3 neighbors. So it's got 2 neighbors. So with 2 neighbors, that proton should be a what? Should be a triplet. Yes. So this would integrate for 1 as a triplet. These two have this neighbor and these two neighbors. That's 3 neighbors. 3 neighbors would generally be a quartet. So this would integrate for 2 for a quartet. Or I would think that this is more likely to be a double triplet, because when you have something like an aldehyde proton out here and a very rigid bond angle, it has a different J value than most of the other things that have sigma bonds with free rotation. And so the double triplet would be more likely in that instance. Okay, these two guys. And these two. Let's do the 2 on the end over here first, because these two only have 2 neighbors. So these would be 2. It would be a triplet. But then what do I expect for these two guys here? They have 1, 2, 3, 4 neighbors. 4 neighbors for these guys. Pentet, good. So there's 2 for a pentet. So all the way around, things that are not working, that thing, the 2 for the pentet, the 2 for the triplet, all of these things are sort of, well, maybe not the 2 for the triplet, but the single 1 as a triplet, the 1 integration, and the 2 as a pentet are not working for me, nor this 2 as a quartet is not coming up. So those are all things. Oh, and what's really critically here? There's no CH3 in this molecule. Sometimes it's not what's there, but what isn't there. So that guy, and that guy definitely rule that out, which is why we have the 1 left standing that fits all of the data. So what I said too is I wanted to show you a little bit about the spectrums that we would expect with these. So let me see if I can take and draw the spectrums in, just the proton spectrum for a minute. Okay, proton spectrum, I expect to see that triplet and then the sextet. And then I expect to see the triplet again in that sort of range. And then I get the aromatics all down here. So let's call these guys A, B, and C. A, B, and C. And I expect integrations of 3, 2, and 2. And that's what I expect. And that's what I actually see in the molecule. How would this other molecule B change from that? What is it that I would expect to see? I would expect to see that triplet, the first triplet, moved down because it's approximately the same distance from the electron withdrawing group as B is here. So the location where B is, I would expect to see A, first triplet, A, move downfield from where it was. And then these two, A, B, and C, I would expect B and C to be very close. So there would be a bigger distance down here, and I would get this quartet. That would be B. And the singlet, which would be C, oops, which would be for 2. I would expect those to be very close together because they're both flanking the same electron withdrawing group. So they'd be in a very similar chemical environment. Okay, A, B, and C. Now this one, I would expect A and B, a singlet integrating for 3. And maybe this 2 for a triplet being very close, but then the other triplet being not quite so downfield. And so this would be C, A, and B. And we can see the different patterns that things are taking, that it's not just about their integration values, but about where they're showing up in the spectrum. Random question, Keegan, to everyone, but on NMR exam, would we only be asked to analyze 1 to 2 total since each takes a while? Ah, that's a great question. It's not a random question. It's a beautiful question, Keegan. Keegan, the answer to that question is on an NMR exam, you analyze the number of reasonable possibilities. So in the rubric that I have together for you, the rubric says that on the final structure analysis, you analyze at least 2. But while I say at least 2, generally what I want you to do is there's generally more than 2 ways to put the molecules together. And if you don't consider all the possibilities, then you may miss one of the possibilities that is the best fit. So reasonably, you're analyzing all the possibilities. But when I say all, I don't mean like every way that you can put it together. I mean all the reasonable possibilities. Usually that comes out to be like 3 or 4 molecules. It doesn't come out to be more than that for most of the things that I try to give you. So that's a great question. Okay, let's look at this structure and what's happening here. And you're right, it does take a little while to go through these, but it's a lot faster when you're not explaining it. It's a lot faster when you can just do it, when you're doing the work. Okay, so one proton. That one proton is an aldehyde. That's going to be a triplet, and it is going to be way, way downfield. This is going to be like around 12 because that's the aldehyde proton. We'll call that guy A. And then we've got B, C, and D. Okay, B is going to be a quartet. Let's leave it as a quartet. It's going to integrate for two. And then upfield from that, I'm going to get two at a pentet. So this was B, C, and then I need a little more room in here. D, actually, I think D is going to be, because the aromatic ring acts as an electron withdrawing group itself, pulls these a little bit downfield. And I'm guessing they're probably going to be a little bit more downfield of these guys. So I'm going to say that this is two for a triplet. And I'm going to put that triplet right in between. So I'm thinking that triplet is somewhere in here. And that's going to integrate for two as well. And that would be D. Okay, so there's all our possibilities. And what I'd like to is go back to the spectrum real quick and sort of imprint this in your brain. Triplet, sextet, triplet. Instead of all these other possibilities where I don't have a singlet and I don't have this way downfield aldehyde peak that would show up here. So we're looking for triplet, sextet, triplet. We go back to our data that was here. Somewhere. And I had outlined it here, triplet, sextet, triplet. And it's really these three, triplet, sextet, and then triplet, although they're not all in line, I kind of want to see them all in line. So I'm going to go back to the data and go back to the proton NMR. And it's these guys here. Which now I have no pointer. This is why I don't come back here. It goes triplet, sextet, triplet. And that's the best fit for the data. Thanks, Sterling. So that's the whole thing. That's how we do one fully out. And I just wanted you guys to see from start to finish. How we go through and figure that out using both carbon and proton and how the carbon and proton help to figure that out. And we could have used the carbon to sort out these possibilities as well based on where the carbonyl is showing up and what type of carbonyl it is. But using the proton tends to be easier, which is why I like to do that. All right. I think Thursday, all things coming together, I expect to do another couple of problems and speed them up and go a little bit faster. And hopefully, as you guys get used to doing these, picking it up and going a little bit faster through them and not going through all the minutiae. We'll look at how to use the coupling constants, how to figure out who's splitting who. We'll talk about some of those things. We'll pick some that are a little bit more challenging to go through and look at. And we'll use the lab both today and Thursday to reinforce. So this afternoon, I have a different lecture than this for the afternoon lab that is sort of reverse engineering that gives you more practice and more thought on how to go through and do these. Okay. So that's kind of where we're going. We'll get a quiz going next week. I have a co-op for you guys to do. I have lots of work for you guys to engage with here starting pretty quickly. Okay. So I think I'll open it up for questions. You guys were pretty quiet with the questions today. I was mostly asking the questions, but feel free to fire away if there are any, and if not,
quick one,
go for it.
So I think I got sort of, I guess, the basics of like the quartet, singlet, doublet. What I'm super uneasy on, and hopefully we'll go over more on Thursday, is like how changing the J values influences like double, triplet, and that, like, I don't think I could identify a double, triplet, or like any combination. If left to my own devices, I could only do the simple ones.
That's actually easier than you think. Let me rephrase that. It is complicated to imagine and try to figure out where the situation arises from. But in terms of understanding, let's say that we have a situation where we have a proton that has two neighbors and one neighbor on the other side. And so we're looking at this guy as HA. These guys are HB, and that guy's HC. I can imagine two different situations. One, where the J value here, let's say J AC equals 5 hertz. And then let's say that this J value, J AB, also equals 5 hertz. And then in this situation, let's say that this J value, for whatever reason, JAC equals 3 hertz. And here we'll keep it 5 hertz. When the J values are the same, they act as if they are exactly on the same type of neighbor. And so we would just say that this is three neighbors all the same. This follows a straight n plus one rule, and what we would expect with three neighbors is a quartet. And they would be in ratios of 1 to 3 to 3 to 1 as a quartet. We could also see that taking and doing the tree diagram. So this would be HA, and then we have HB, and we split it. We come back and we split it again. I'm not doing my best here, but I think you get the idea. And then we split it back again, and this is HC, and they are all splitting at the same 1, 3, 3, 1, marking the intensities where they overlap, which is giving me the pattern that is the quartet. In the other one, this is what I call a 2+1, because they have different J values. One has 3 hertz J value and the other one has 5 hertz J value. This is the one that is going to give, this one splits it into a doublet. This one splits it into a triplet. And so this equals the double triplet that we would expect to see. And the double triplet can look like a lot of different things. I hate to even show you, let's just do a triplet that's here and then another triplet that's here. That is the double triplet, and it is a 1 to 2 to 1 to 1 to 2 to 1 ratio, but they can overlap. And different things can happen. And so as we see, if we take HA, now this one I need to be a little bit more cautious on, and I say this is my 5 hertz, and I'll do the big coupling constant first. So there's HB. Come back, this overlaps into the triplet at 5 hertz. So I try to keep the splittings about the same. There's HB. Now I do an HC at 3 hertz. So at 3 hertz, they don't come back to overlap because I was going 2.5 out and 2.5 in. Now at 3 hertz, I'm only going to go 1.5 out. So I'm going to come out here at a smaller coupling constant. Out here, not all the way back. And I get intensities of 1 to 1 to 2 to 2 to 1 to 1. This is my double triplet, and they are overlapping. But the way that they're overlapping is they're looking more like this. I'm getting 1 to 1 to 2 to 2 to 1 to 1. This is the pattern that I'm seeing, but it's highlighted like this. There's one triplet, and here's the other triplet. And so the two double triplets overlapped. So in answer to your question, how do you know, or how do you expect when it's going to do this or when it's going to do this, just by looking at the molecule? The answer to that question is you can't. And so when I was saying that your question is easier than you expect, it's because there is no answer to your question. The answer to your question is that you have to allow for both possibilities. And there's no way by looking at the molecule to know which possibility is going to happen. So when we see a situation where we have protons that are in this arrangement and one proton that is flanked by two on one side in one environment and one on the other side by another environment, the possibility is that they will coalesce and act with the same J value. But an equal possibility is that they may have different J values. And so that you may get the different pattern. And so I call it sort of the four neighbors, excuse me, three neighbors as a quartet, or a 1+2 neighbor, 1+2 meaning that they have different J values. And I allow for the quartet, or the double triplet. And you just write both down next to the proton saying it could be either or. And then you allow for that in the spectrum. Does that kind of make sense out of it?
Helps some and raises like 10 more questions. I'm sure it'll get better with practice.
It'll get better with practice. I agree. Yes. And that's often what happens, is it often raises other questions. But I wanted to hit that. We had just enough time to sort of hit that question. Let me go ahead and stop the recording, and then I'll stay on the line. And if anybody wants to look at a few more, I'm happy to do that. We can also address more in the afternoon lab. If you have more questions and you want to do them there, that's a perfect spot to do them too. So let me go ahead and stop the recording, and you guys can keep firing away questions. And if there aren't any, I'm happy to just see you in the afternoon lab as well.
Thanks, Jason.
You're welcome, Mary.
Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome, BB.